We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Sean Diddy Combs' legal nightmare just got worse. Federal prosecutors have expanded their case, bringing new allegations and disturbing evidence into the mix. If the charges against him weren't already serious enough, the latest filing paints an even darker picture. One that federal agents say proves Combs wasn't just throwing extravagant parties, but allegedly running a long-term organized system of sexual coercion and trafficking. And now, with new details in the indictment, including surveillance footage and witness testimony, the case against him is looking more damning by the day. The most explosive piece of evidence? A 2016 surveillance video showing Combs allegedly dragging a woman against her will after she attempted to flee from one of his infamous freak-off parties. These events, private gatherings allegedly fueled by drugs, sex workers, and non-consensual encounters, have been at the center of the government's case. Prosecutors argue that this footage directly supports multiple accusers' statements and confirms that Combs used intimidation and violence to control the women in his circle. This new indictment adds three additional women to the list of alleged victims, all of whom claim they were lured, coerced, or forced into sexual situations at Combs's direction. The details are graphic. Prosecutors allege that Combs provided drugs like ketamine, ecstasy, and methamphetamine to keep women compliant, with sources describing stockpiles of more than 1,000 bottles of lubricant allegedly used at these events. The government claims these weren't isolated incidents, but rather part of a decades-long enterprise orchestrated by Combs to ensure his parties ran exactly as he wanted. The prosecutor's case is built on a RICO, Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act framework typically used to target organized crime. The argument is that Combs didn't just engage in occasional misconduct, but operated a systematic criminal enterprise that involved employees, security teams, and other enablers who helped him transport women across state lines, procure drugs, and silence those who tried to speak out. According to court filings, Combs allegedly used his businesses, Bad Boy Entertainment, Revolt TV, and other ventures, as a front to facilitate these crimes, all while maintaining the public persona of a successful media mogul. The government is also relying on financial records, private messages, and witness testimony to tie Combs to this alleged trafficking network. Prosecutors claim they have bank statements showing payments made to alleged victims, travel records indicating flights arranged for women to attend these parties, and communications between Combs and his team that detail how these events were planned. They also say that more witnesses from Combs's inner circle, including former employees, are cooperating with the case. With a case this aggressive, you'd expect Combs's defense team to be fighting back just as hard, and they are. His attorneys are pushing back against the charges, particularly targeting one of the key laws being used against him, the Mann Act. This is a federal law originally enacted in 1910, which makes it a crime to transport individuals across state lines for immoral purposes. Combs's lawyers argue that the Mann Act is racist and that their client is being selectively prosecuted under an outdated statute that has historically been used to target black men. They point out that the law was originally created as a way to criminalize interracial relationships and was later used to go after high-profile black celebrities like Jack Johnson, Chuck Berry, and others. In a new motion filed this past week, his attorneys argue that no white man has ever been prosecuted under these circumstances, and that this is part of a broader pattern of racial discrimination in the justice system. The prosecution, of course, sees it differently. They claim this isn't about race or outdated laws. It's about a powerful man allegedly abusing his influence to traffic and exploit women. And so far, the courts haven't been sympathetic to Combs' arguments. He remains behind bars, denied bail since his arrest, with the judge citing flight risk concerns and potential witness tampering as key reasons for keeping him in custody. If convicted, Combs is looking at a potential life sentence. With the new charges stacked against him, the prosecution is making it clear. They're not just trying to take down a celebrity, they're trying to dismantle what they allege is a criminal enterprise that has operated unchecked for years. With jury selection on the horizon and his legal team scrambling to challenge the latest developments, the stakes have never been higher. And while the federal case is growing more intense, that's just one battle Combs is fighting. Outside of the criminal courtroom, he's dealing with a wave of civil lawsuits, many of which stem from similar accusations. And in some cases, those lawsuits are starting to fall apart in unexpected ways. The civil lawsuits against Sean Diddy Combs were already piling up, but after Cassie Ventura's lawsuit cracked open the dam, the flood of allegations became impossible to ignore. What started as a single high-profile claim has now spiraled into a legal war on multiple fronts, with accusations spanning decades and involving numerous plaintiffs, lawyers, and rapidly shifting narratives. Unlike the federal case, which is focused on criminal charges that could put Combs in prison for life, these civil cases revolve around financial damages, reputation destruction, and the broader public perception of his guilt or innocence. And while some of these lawsuits appear strong, others are beginning to unravel in ways that are raising serious questions about credibility, legal tactics, and potential bad faith claims. Cassie's lawsuit was the turning point. Filed in November 2023, it alleged years of sexual, physical, and emotional abuse at the hands of Combs, painting a disturbing picture of a relationship defined by coercion, violent outbursts, and forced sexual encounters with third parties. She described a world in which Combs allegedly controlled her with fear, demanding loyalty while subjecting her to degrading acts. The lawsuit was settled within 24 hours, with both parties agreeing to a private resolution. But despite the settlement, the damage was done. Combs vehemently denied her allegations, but the public saw it differently. If the claims weren't true, why settle so fast? That lawsuit opened the door for other women and even men to come forward with their own claims, filing lawsuits under New York's Adult Survivors Act, which allowed victims of past sexual misconduct to bring civil claims that would have otherwise been time-barred. Some of these lawsuits echoed Cassie's allegations almost word for word, describing similar freak-off parties, instances of drugging and coercion, and claims that Combs used his wealth and power to silence victims who tried to escape his orbit. Others went even further, alleging that Combs had engaged in human trafficking, child exploitation, and orchestrated sex abuse on a scale that stretched back decades. While the federal case is attempting to prosecute Combs for criminal conduct, these civil cases are about money. Damages for alleged emotional distress, financial compensation for past abuse, and, in some instances, settlements that could help accusers avoid the trauma of prolonged court battles. But with so many lawsuits being filed in rapid succession, a new problem emerged: credibility. One of the most explosive cases was the lawsuit filed by an anonymous Jane Doe who alleged that both Combs and Jay-Z raped her when she was just 13 years old. The claim was shocking, naming two of the biggest names in hip-hop as co-defendants in an alleged assault that supposedly took place at an after-party following the 2000 MTV Video Music Awards. The lawsuit was sensational, headline-grabbing, and deeply disturbing. But then, almost as quickly as it was filed, it was voluntarily dismissed. No settlement, no explanation, just dropped. That decision raised immediate questions. Combs' legal team pounced on the dismissal, calling it evidence that many of these lawsuits are meritless and financially motivated. If the claim was so serious, why withdraw it? And if there was any real basis for it, why not press criminal charges instead? Jay-Z, who was also named in the suit, went on the offensive, calling the allegations outrageous, fictitious, and appalling. His attorneys accused the accuser's legal team of engaging in blackmail, daring them to take the case to law enforcement if they truly believed in the allegations. But instead, the lawsuit disappeared without a trace, fueling speculation that it was nothing more than a publicity stunt or a failed legal shakedown. Even with one major lawsuit off the board, plenty remain. Combs still faces multiple civil suits, including one from a woman who claims he drugged and raped her in the 1990s when she was 17, and another from a Jane Doe who says she was assaulted at a private event in 2015. These cases haven't been dropped, but Combs' team is fighting them aggressively. arguing that many of the claims are copycats filed under the loosest legal thresholds available. His lawyers insist that these suits are built on exaggerations, misinformation, and opportunistic plaintiffs hoping to capitalize on the media frenzy. To that end, Combs' legal team has gone after the attorneys filing these cases, particularly Tony Busby, the high-profile Houston-based lawyer representing multiple accusers. In a new legal maneuver, Combs' lawyers have formally moved to block Busby from practicing in the New York federal court handling these cases. They claim Busby has engaged in unethical conduct, including submitting legal filings before he was officially admitted to practice in the district, violating pro-hack vice admission rules, and manipulating public narratives with inflammatory press conferences and media appearances. The argument isn't just procedural. It's a calculated effort to discredit the civil cases at their foundation. If Combs' team can paint Busby as a reckless, rule-breaking lawyer out for attention and money, it weakens the credibility of every case he's attached to. And with the lawsuit against Combs and Jay-Z already dropped, they're gaining momentum in the battle to frame these lawsuits as nothing more than opportunistic legal attacks designed to pressure Combs into settlements. But whether or not these lawsuits hold up in court, they're already shaping public perception. Every new filing reinforces the image of Combs as a predator, a powerful man who used his wealth and influence to cover up decades of abuse. And even if some cases fall apart, the damage to his reputation, brand, and business empire is undeniable. The civil lawsuits may not carry the weight of a federal prison sentence, but they add to the storm of legal troubles surrounding Combs, making it harder for him to present himself as a victim of a government witch hunt. If anything, they create a second battlefield, one where every new accusation fuels the fire, and where the stakes aren't just about money, but about whether Combs can ever rebuild his life, career, and public image again. As his legal team fights to discredit these cases, and as some of them begin to crumble, the focus will shift to how these lawsuits influence the federal trial and whether the prosecution can use them to reinforce their case. Because while the civil cases may be about money, the federal case is about something much bigger, Combs' freedom. Anthony Rico's sudden exit from Sean Diddy Combs' legal team didn't just raise eyebrows. It sent a clear signal that something inside the defense camp wasn't right. Lawyers don't walk away from high-profile, high-paying cases weeks before trial unless there's a serious reason. And Rico's reason? He wouldn't say. All he left behind was a carefully worded statement. Under no circumstances can I continue. No elaboration, no explanation, just those words. That alone is enough to make people question what's really going on behind closed doors. Rico isn't a rookie. He's a veteran criminal defense attorney who has taken on some of the most controversial and difficult cases in modern history, from defending terrorism suspects to police officers in high-profile brutality cases. He has stood by clients that the public had already condemned, fought against the death penalty for men accused of heinous crimes, and built a reputation as a lawyer who doesn't scare easily. But this case? This is the one he walked away from. And that's where the speculation begins. His resignation raises three major possibilities. The first is that he encountered something within the case, evidence, testimony, or strategy decisions, that made him feel ethically compromised. If Rico saw or learned something that made him believe he couldn't ethically defend Combs, then he would have been obligated to step away. The fact that he cited the ABA standards for criminal justice suggests that whatever pushed him to this decision wasn't just a personality clash or a disagreement, it was something he legally or ethically couldn't justify continuing to fight for. The second possibility is that there was a major internal dispute within the defense team, something serious enough that Rico felt it was better to walk away than to continue. When multiple lawyers work on a case of this scale, differences in strategy are inevitable, but Rico leaving this close to trial suggests something more than just disagreements over courtroom tactics. Maybe he wanted Combs to consider a plea deal and the rest of the team refused. Maybe he felt the defense's approach was doomed to fail and he didn't want his name attached to it. Or maybe there were fundamental disagreements on how to handle the evidence, the witnesses, or the trial presentation. And then there's the third possibility, the most troubling one. What if Combs himself was the reason? a defense lawyer's relationship with their client is crucial. If there is a complete breakdown of trust, or if the lawyer believes their client isn't being honest or cooperating, it makes a solid defense impossible. Rico may have reached the point where he felt that working with Combs was no longer viable. If that's the case, then this is more than just a legal shakeup. It's a red flag about the entire state of the defense. Regardless of the reason, the timing of Rico's departure is disastrous for Combs. Losing a seasoned trial attorney weeks before the case goes to court isn't just inconvenient. It's a major disruption. The defense now has to reassign responsibilities, make last-minute adjustments, and figure out how to move forward without looking like they're scrambling. Meanwhile, the prosecution is watching this unfold in real time, and they will use it to their advantage. They don't even have to say much. Just let the jury wonder why a respected lawyer suddenly wanted nothing to do with the case. They don't have to prove that Rico saw something damning. They just have to let the thought linger. And if the defense starts making sloppy arguments or contradicting themselves in court, the prosecution can subtly suggest that Rico walked away because he knew this was a losing battle. It's not just about courtroom strategy either. Jury perception matters. The moment jurors get the impression that the defense doesn't even believe in their own client, the trial is already off to a bad start. So where does this leave Combs? His legal team still has strong players. Mark Agnifilo remains the lead attorney, with Tenny Giragos and others handling different aspects of the case. But Rico's exit has created an undeniable gap in experience and trial strategy. Agnifilo, a former federal prosecutor, is no stranger to high-pressure cases, but losing an attorney who was deeply involved in trial prep this late in the game forces the team to recalibrate. The biggest concern now is whether this will be the first of more legal shakeups. If Rico's departure was part of a larger internal problem, could more lawyers follow? Could Combs himself decide to change his legal approach, especially with the pressure of trial mounting? If more exits, firings, or changes happen, it will only add to the perception that the defense is struggling. And in a case where the stakes are this high, losing control of the narrative could be just as damaging as losing in court. Jury selection is approaching. The prosecution is preparing to lay out its case. The government believes it has enough evidence to convict Combs for life. His defense team can't afford any more distractions, but with everything happening behind the scenes, it's clear that the road ahead is only getting rougher.
The Smiths thought they found the perfect babysitter. Sweet, responsible, a glowing recommendation from the neighbors. She had a way with kids, calm, patient, always smiling. But what the Smiths didn't know was that their perfect babysitter had been using that same glowing reputation to slip in and out of homes for years, quietly collecting little trophies from every house she entered. Bracelets, photos, sometimes something even more disturbing. If only they had known. If only they had heard the exact type of case like this, broken down on Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If they had only subscribed to True Crime Today, Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened ad-free before everyone else and caught on to the signs before it was too late. Instead, let's just say they're in desperate need of a new babysitter and some therapy. Subscribe now to True Crime Today, Premium Plus, on Apple Podcasts.